At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Let's be real. The worst thing any rapper could be called is soft.
This is my alter ego, Anita Mox Wien.
For most rappers, being labeled as soft or nice pretty much invites instant mockery. Hip-hop has always been considered a competitive genre, and rappers are expected to stand on business. If you want to be considered one of the best, you have to be perceived as the hardest in the room. But it wasn't always like this. Back in the 80s, a lot of hip-hop culture focused on partying, positivity, and unity. Artists like the Beastie Boys made lighthearted, popular records, while rappers like Public Enemy stressed the Stop the Violence movement. So, what exactly changed? We're gonna investigate how nice rappers became Public Enemy number one in hip-hop. Which rapper rose to fame as hip-hop's number one bad guy? And how did a young Kanye West make being nice popular again? We dug through rap history, comparing the album sales and lyrics for some of the most popular rappers in the game to fully understand how hip-hop's changed before fans' eyes. Which of your favorite artists have held themselves back from the GOAT status by being too nice when they could have gone full demon mode instead? And how did Drake, the most popular artist in the game, change his image by being the nice guy from Canada to hip-hop's biggest bully?
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
The rap game changed forever on August 8th of 1988 when N.W.A. dropped their landmark debut album, Straight Outta Compton. Before Straight Outta Compton, hip-hop was dominated by East Coast artists with a very specific style. While hip-hop was always street-oriented, many of its superstars stressed a message focused on positivity and social commentary. Biz Markie, the Beastie Boys, and Salt-N-Pepa were some of the torchbearers for what critics call the golden age of hip-hop. But N.W.A. hit the music industry like an atomic bomb. Straight Outta Compton became the first gangster rap album to be certified platinum. And while N.W.A. didn't invent gangster rap, that would be Philly rapper Schoolie D, they definitely made it mainstream. Mainstream news outlets were scandalized by songs like Police and Gangsta Gangsta. The FBI even sent a warning letter to the group criticizing its lyrical content, while N.W.A. branded itself as the world's most dangerous group. Eazy-E, who executive produced the album and has since been called the godfather of gangster rap, famously referred to himself as the villain. And ever since then, rappers have followed in his footsteps to be the bad guy as well. Gangster rap became a big business, and artists quickly learned that controversy and notoriety sells. Dr. Dre left N.W.A. to join Death Row Records, where he oversaw a whole new generation of rising gangster rappers. His solo debut album, The Chronic, went triple platinum, spending 8 months on the Billboard Top 10. Just a year later, Dre produced Snoop Dogg's debut album, Doggy Style, which became the fastest-selling rap album of all time. In 1995, Tupac signed a record deal with Death Row. While Pac had built a career as a socially conscious, sensitive artist who made controversial music, his team up with Death Row CEO Suge Knight radically changed his image. He openly dissed his former friend, the notorious B.I.G. on his song Hit Him Up, where he threatened Biggie's life and claimed to sleep with his wife, Faith Evans. He released the album All Eyes on Me, which was his first all-out gangster rap album. While critics noticed that Pac's lyrical content have changed, All Eyes on Me would go on to be one of the most successful albums of all time. Not only did it debut at number one, but it also went diamond. While West Coast artists like Pac, Snoop, Dre, and Eazy-E were celebrated as gangster rap legends, the trend of being the bad guy took off all across the country. In the South, Scarface and the Ghetto Boys quickly learned that controversy sells. When Ghetto Boys member Bushwick Bill was shot in the eye during a fight with his girlfriend, the group used a photo of an injured Bill in the hospital as the album cover for their platinum-selling record, We Can't Be Stopped. On the East Coast, a whole new wave of New York rappers like Nas, Jay-Z, and DMX took over the radio by making music that spoke on the first-person reality of living life as a hustler. Albums like Jay-Z's Reasonable Doubt and Nas' It Was Written took gangster rap to new heights as the artists adopted more extravagant personalities, coining a whole new subgenre called mafioso rap. The record sales said it all. The bad guy was here to stay. Villainy ruled the charts, and one rapper in particular took his very real struggle on the streets into the booth to break records and take shots at a growing roster of high-profile enemies along the way.
You have to come with me. I'm like, what? I have to arrest you? I said, what the f*** is you talking about?
In 2003, Carter's 50 Cent Jackson had the best-selling album of the year with his blockbuster debut, Get Rich or Die Trying. The album sold over 1.6 million records in its first 2 weeks. It was a blockbuster gangster rap success like the industry had never seen. Part of what made 50 so successful is that he had one of the most authentic and craziest backstories of all time. For years, he'd been embroiled in a beef with Kenneth Supreme McGriff, one of New York City's most notorious drug lords, which led to 50 being shot 9 times in front of his grandmother's house. He was dropped by Columbia Records back in 2000 and still continued to grind and record music that led to a $1 million record deal with Dr. Dre and Eminem. But more than anything else, 50 Cent loved being the bad guy. Get Rich or Die Trying was full of disses towards Ja Rule, another Queens rapper who had close ties to 50's enemy Supreme. While Ja Rule started his career as a gangster rapper, he really got successful by making high-charting pop records with artists like Ashanti and Jennifer Lopez. 50 relentlessly mocked Ja for his image and reputation, ridiculing the idea that Ja was actually gangster. 50 Cent made beefing with other artists a focal point of his celebrity. While other rappers had engaged in the battle before, 50 took antagonizing his enemies to new heights. In order to disrespect Fat Joe, 50 put an unflattering picture of his op on the cover of a mixtape and called it Elephant in the Sand. When Rick Ross called 50 Cent out on a song, 50 responded by releasing pictures proving that Ross formerly worked as a corrections officer and made a whole cartoon series called Officer Ricky. 50 Cent reveled in being the guy that played nice with nobody. He beefed with industry heavyweights like Nas, Jay-Z, and Diddy without ever caring about the fallout. Even when he had disagreements with people on his own label G-Unit, like The Game and Young Buck, he ruthlessly attacked them. 50's commitment to being a hip-hop supervillain not only made him a menace, but it solidified his brand as the ultimate bad guy. On top of that, it made gangster rap more relevant than ever before. After Death Row Records declined in the late 90s, Diddy's brand of shiny suit hip-hop had taken over the charts. By mixing pop sensibilities with R&B, hip-hop had shifted away from its grittier early days, only for 50 to drag gangster rap right back in the spotlight. 50 was the embodiment of nice guys finish last. That is until he tried to beef with the artist who was the exact opposite of everything he was.
I wish you would come take one of my awards so I could black his eye.
For years, Kanye West dreamed of signing to Jay-Z's Rockefeller Records. Ye had shot to prominence after helping to produce much of Jay-Z's 2001 album, The Blueprint. His sped-up, soul-sampled production soundtracked artists like Alicia Keys, Ludacris, and Cameron. But Ye received little respect for his actual rapping. Kanye took label meeting after label meeting, only to be turned down for not being seen as gangsta enough. Finally, Dame Dash, the co-founder of Rockefeller Records, reluctantly agreed to sign Ye because he was afraid of another label having first pick over his production. And Dame had no idea how much signing Ye would change the landscape of hip-hop. Over the mid-2000s, Kanye West established himself as a completely new type of rap superstar. Instead of posturing as the bad guy, Ye leaned into being himself, with socially conscious lyrics where he grappled with themes like family, religion, and materialism. He wore a polo and called himself the Louis Vuitton Don, standing apart from his gangster rap contemporaries. While a lot of record execs doubted his strategy, it absolutely worked. His debut album, The College Dropout, went multi-platinum and won Rap Album of the Year at the Grammys. And on the song Through the Wire, Ye explained what made himself different from other rappers out there. But he wasn't talking about coke and birds, it was more like spoken word, except he's really putting it down. His follow-up, Late Registration, was even bigger. It sold 860,000 copies in its first week, had a chart-topping hit single with Gold Digger, and pulled 8 Grammy nominations at the Grammys, including another Rap Album of the Year win. It was only a matter of time before hip-hop's newly minted nice guy would go head-to-head with the music industry's most formidable supervillain. In 2007, Kanye West and 50 Cent were gearing up to release their third studio albums on the exact same day, setting up a monumental sales war between two of the biggest rappers of all time. The showdown between Kanye and 50 generated huge waves of publicity. The two rappers even appeared on the cover of Rolling Stone together to hype the sales battle, while 50 vowed to quit rapping if Kanye outsold him. To fans, this was the quintessential clash of the titans, the backpack rapper from Chicago versus the Southside Jamaica Queens ultimate bad guy. But when Kanye's album Graduation dropped, it sold a whopping 957,000 copies in a week, topping the Billboard charts. 50 Cent's Curtis, meanwhile, debuted at number 2, selling 691,000 copies, about 250,000 less copies than Kanye. 50 brushed off the defeat and didn't keep his promise to quit rapping. But for the rest of the world, Kanye's success over 50 looks like a major vibe shift in hip-hop. After years of gangster rap dominance, the Nice Guy beat 50 Cent at his own game. Kanye's success spawned a whole new generation of Nice Guy rappers who modeled themselves after him, but fair warning, the results may vary.
I think he was trying to do the J. Cole thing, to be fair to him, where he's like, hey, we're all great. Like, yeah. I'm making sure everybody feels good about themselves. Yeah. I think kids are just not like that as much anymore. Nah.
J. Cole models himself after Kanye in a lot of ways. He got signed by Jay-Z, produced his own music, and even paid homage to freestyling over classic Ye beats like Devil in a New Dress and Last Call. As a college graduate with a middle-class upbringing, Cole built a devoted fan base by being the conscious rapper that would f*** another bitch. But while Cole's Nice Guy sensibility might have gotten him platinum plaques, it did come with plenty of hate. Critics frequently described J. Cole as boring in his subject matter and content, while rappers like Youngboy Never Broke Again have openly disrespected him by not turning up to book studio sessions. When Kendrick Lamar called out J. Cole on Like That, Cole seemed to turn off the Nice Guy mode in order to fire back with a diss track, 7-Minute Drill, only for him to publicly disavow and apologize for that diss just 2 days later.
I want to say right now tonight, how many people think Kendrick Lamar is one of the greatest motherfuckers to ever touch a fucking microphone?
Chance the Rapper, like Kanye, claims Chicago and has long cited his admiration for Ye. He's also the epitome of the Nice Guy rapper, mostly known for rapping about how much he loves Jesus and his wife. But let's just say the Nice Guy act blew up in Chance's face. His last album, Big Day, was widely derided and memed for being solely about Chance saying, oh, I love my wife. Then his wife announced that she was divorcing him, and it's been nearly 5 years since Chance dropped a follow-up project. Meanwhile, Post Malone earned a reputation for being a total sweetheart. His whole career has been filled with wholesome viral videos of him openly embracing his fans, taking time to interact with them, and treat them with respect. It's worth mentioning, though, that his rap album sales has slowly declined over the years. After multiple chart-topping albums, his 2023 release, Austin, sold noticeably less. Maybe that's why Post transitioned to country music, and it seems to be working out quite well. His new project, F1 Trillion, was a smash hit that returned Post to the top of the Billboard charts with a whopping 250,000 copies sold. Logic definitely fits this category too. He built his career by making lyrical, wholesome backpack rap with positive messages. But at the same time, his confessional good guy persona came with a lot of blowback. He's been called corny, weird, and roundly mocked for his persona. Like Chance, he decided to prominently feature his then-wife Jessica Andrea, even placing her on the album artwork of his mixtape Bobby Tarantino 2, only for her to divorce him just a year later. Logic's latest album, Ultra 85, debuted to positive reviews, but the project only sold 17,873 copies in its first week. A career low. Even after 2 Grammy nominations, it looks like the Nice Guy curse still hasn't worn off. Playing nice in the rap game might earn you fans at first, but it's only a matter of time before they turn on you for not being tough enough. And you might lose your wife over it too. Just being honest. Maybe that's why the most well-known nice rapper in the game gave himself an entire makeover.
I do love to make, you know, R&B music, slow music, but like, man, it feels good to have one of those slappers. Like,
in 2009, Drake solidified himself as the hottest up-and-coming rapper in the industry with his mixtape So Far Gone. The project not only introduced Drake to the mainstream with the smash lead single Best I Ever Had, but it also established him as a vulnerable young dude from Canada trying to make a name for himself. In every way, he was the opposite of the archetype established by street dudes like 50 Cent, DMX, and Jay-Z. Drake himself credited Kanye West with paving the way for him, showing how much Ye changed the rules of the rap game. Drake's blend of R&B and hip-hop gave him a unique lane in the music industry, while his confessional, personal lyrics earned him plenty of diehard fans. Lil Wayne, his mentor and label boss, gave him the advice to be yourself, while Drake gave interviews talking about being uncool in high school and feeling like an outsider in Toronto's Forest Hills neighborhood. But there was also plenty of backlash. Drake was frequently mocked for his persona and was labeled soft by both peers and fans. Common, a veteran Chicago rapper, recorded multiple diss tracks where he called Drake sweet and mocked him for making music. As Drake started to accumulate popularity and success, his lyrical content changed accordingly. The subject matter became darker and more street-oriented in 2015 when he released his Atlanta-inspired mixtape, If You're Reading This, It's Too Late. Just months later, he released his first collaborative album, What a Time to Be Alive with Future, another Atlanta artist. Drake began to rap more about being surveilled by the police, ordering hits on his ops, and guns. Drake's change in image only seemed to make him more popular. If You're Reading This, It's Too Late broke Drake's own record for Spotify streams in its debut week. Drake seemingly tailored his image so he could be around more street rappers, particularly from Atlanta, like 21 Savage, Lil Baby, and Migos, while his lyrics included coded shoutouts to crime groups like the Hells Angels. Drake's new persona did not go unnoticed by his rivals. On Pusha T's 2018 diss track, The Story of Adidon, he raps, "Your music for the past few years been angry and full of lies." In 2024, Kendrick Lamar rapped on Euphoria, "I like Drake with the melodies, I don't like Drake when he acts tough." Kanye, Drake's one-time collaborator turned sworn enemy, tweeted that Drake is running around like he's Tupac. By all appearances, it seems like Drake realized that the nice guy act could only last too long, and it paid off handsomely. His album releases routinely shattered streaming records on Spotify. Drake himself is one of the most streamed artists on any genre, holding over 101 billion streams on the platform. While his tough guy act might have walked him into staggering defeats against artists like Kendrick Lamar and Pusha T, it also seems to have extended his longevity in the rap game and remade him from the boy into the sixth god. If Drake had stayed a nice guy, the truth is he would probably not be nearly as relevant as he is today. If you want a deeper look on how Drake's streaming numbers might be in jeopardy, we've done an entire deep dive on how Drake and Kendrick are battling it out for the title King of Streaming.